Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's MolDEV press conference on lawsuit to block Texas SB4. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone telephone. You may withdraw yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Please note, this call may be recorded. I will be standing by should you need any assistance. And it is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Mr. Thomas Sines with MolDEV. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. This is Thomas Sines. I am President and General Counsel of MolDEV, the Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, and I am pleased to welcome you to this conference call to discuss the filing this evening of a lawsuit on behalf of four plaintiffs challenging Texas's SB4. That lawsuit has been filed in federal district court in San Antonio, and it was filed by MolDEV on behalf of the city of San Antonio and three significant nonprofit organizations. It raises numerous constitutional claims against SB4 and seeks to prevent the law from being implemented as it is currently intended on September 1st. Among those multiple constitutional claims are arguments against each and every provision of SB4. Which, if it took effect, would deliver immediate injury to the plaintiffs and others throughout the state of Texas. Many of you are aware that immediately after the signing of SB4 by Governor Abbott, the state of Texas sued in its own right MolDEV, the city of Austin, and Travis County, seeking preemptively a declaration of the constitutionality of SB4. The case that's filed this evening is the only appropriate venue to determine the constitutionality of SB4. It is superior to the frivolous action filed by Governor Abbott and the state of Texas the day after the signing for a number of reasons. First, the plaintiffs, including the city of San Antonio, have real injuries that they would suffer if SB4 is implemented, as opposed to the conjecture involved in the frivolous action filed by Texas. And second, this lawsuit has multiple constitutional claims that are not even mentioned in the state of Texas's lawsuit, preemptive lawsuit against MolDEV and others. All of those multiple constitutional claims that we will gladly explain further and that will be detailed in a summary that will be attached to a press release you all will receive, all of those multiple constitutional claims basically relate to the illegality of empowering each and every police officer, sheriff's deputy, booking agent, and other law enforcement figures in the state of Texas to decide on their own without any guidance or restriction from their duly elected and appointed superiors, police chiefs, sheriffs, and elected officials, without any guidance or restriction from them. Those police officers would be empowered to decide on their own whether and how to enforce federal immigration law throughout the state of Texas. That not only ensures arbitrary and unconstitutional enforcement throughout Texas, it also takes away the rights and authority of those duly elected to ensure that we have a non-arbitrary and uniform law enforcement in cities and counties throughout the state. It is now my pleasure to introduce the city attorney of San Antonio, one of the lead plaintiffs in this action, Andy Segovia. Andy.
Good evening, everyone. This is Andy Segovia, city attorney for San Antonio. At the direction of the city council, we are filing a complaint in federal court, as Tom said, challenging the constitutionality of SB4. Essentially, we're doing that for three principal reasons. One is we're very keen on making sure that municipalities, particularly San Antonio, maintains local control of the city's operations and resources, particularly when it comes to resources and effectiveness of our public safety. We have been on record a number of times, and our police chief has been on record a number of times, saying how SB4 would undermine our ability to effectively manage our police force. We believe very strongly in community policing, which means that we look for the community to have full confidence that our police force is there to protect them, to protect public safety, and that they have every right and are encouraged to work with our police department on enhancing public safety. We think that the passage of SB 4 severely undermines that, and very much want to see that overturned. Second, we think the SB 4 is discriminatory, given the unfettered nature to which it requires enforcement of immigration laws, local participation in that. It will inevitably lead to targeting of minorities regardless of their status. So we feel that because of that discriminatory nature, we do have to challenge the SB 4. Finally, it does very much undermine the ability of our public officials, particularly of our elected public officials, to advocate and develop policy on behalf of the city and on behalf of their constituents. Because of the draconian measures in SB 4 in terms of remedy, public officials, if they advocate a position that could be characterized as challenging SB 4, they would face potentially removal from office. And we strongly feel that public officials should have every ability to advocate and develop policy for the city and for their constituents. And those are the principal reasons why the City of San Antonio has filed a complaint, and we look forward to working with MALDEF and the other parties in furthering the litigation. And with that, the next speaker, I think, is Marisa Bueno.
Thank you, Andy, and MALDEF looks forward to working with San Antonio throughout this case. It is now my pleasure to introduce MALDEF Southwest Regional Council, Marisa Bono, who filed the case this evening, alleging claims under the 1st, 4th, and 14th Amendments of the Constitution, as well as the Contracts Clause, the Supremacy Clause, and the Voting Rights Act. Marisa.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. My name is Marisa Bono. I'm the Southwest Regional Council of MALDEF. As we at MALDEF stated repeatedly during the legislative session, SB 4 is illegal, it's unconstitutional, and it's fundamentally flawed. The legislature heard firsthand from thousands of witnesses from across the state just how fraught with constitutional violations this bill is, but they ignored those voices and they passed the bill anyway. As a result, cities like San Antonio are forced to enforce immigration law in ways that the federal law does not require. As San Antonio embarks on its tricentennial and MALDEF on its 50th anniversary, it's disgraceful that in this day and age we still have to fight hateful, misguided legislation like this in court, especially when so many other similar attempts have failed across the country. SB 4 is morally reprehensible and legally indefensible, and we stand proudly with San Antonio, where MALDEF was founded, and with the organizations that have stood up today in defense of their members. This case is for all Texans who believe in the law and the Constitution. Thank you.
Thank you, Marisa. And as Marisa mentioned, and I did as well, there are three significant nonprofit organizations that have stepped forward, cognizant of the harms at SB 4, constitutional and other harms that SB 4 would deal to their members and those they serve. It's now my pleasure to introduce the first of these organizations, the executive director of La Unión del Pueblo Entero, or LUPE, Juanita Valdez Cox.
Yes, thank you. LUPE, who is a membership organization, a grassroots organization of over 8,000 members, is part of this lawsuit against the state of Texas and the Governor Abbott because we cannot understand and because we will not tolerate the basic premise of this hateful law. The reality that is that our communities are safer when more of us have access to due process and equal justice. And also because at our social service offices, we have seen the results of this hateful, racist bill, and therefore standing for our communities, we joined this lawsuit in hopes that it will not be implemented on September the 1st, because again, the authorities will now have much more to when they stop motorists, as they have been doing and already, and asking for their legal documents. We have families that, after so many years, are having to or returning because of the fear returning to Mexico. We had a family that was from Peru being here so many years, 20-some years, with U.S. children taking them out of school and returning. to their country of origin because of the fear that they have, because of not wanting to come out of their homes and attend to their health care or to their, you know, education, or just to go about their daily business. And therefore it is for those reasons and many others that we as a nonprofit membership organization were part of this lawsuit.
Thank you. And SB4 does exempt certain federally recognized sensitive locations from its draconian measures, but one sensitive location that is specifically targeted are universities and colleges. And with that in mind, it's my pleasure to introduce the president of the Texas Association of Chicanos in Higher Education, Belinda Saldana Harmon.
Yes, thank you, and good evening. The Texas Association of Chicanos in Higher Education is a professional association that has advocated for the historically underrepresented in higher education for over 42 years. We have membership across the state of Texas that includes students, faculty, staff, community colleges, and universities. When public policy is detrimental to college faculty, staff, or students, when it threatens their civil rights on the campus, in the classroom, or it threatens to increase inequities in higher education, SACHA must take action, SACHA must speak out, and that is why we are here.
Thank you. And among the individuals who would be most harmed by implementation of SB4 are also the workers who form the backbone of Texas's economy. So it's now my pleasure to introduce the executive director of another plaintiff, the Workers' Defense Project, Jose Garza.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Jose Garza, and I am the executive director of Workers' Defense Project. For over 10 years, Workers' Defense has been fighting side by side with our members to build power for working families. When Governor Abbott signed SB4 into law, Workers' Defense members vowed to fight this show-me-your-paper law in the streets and in the courtroom. This past Monday, Workers' Defense and our allies brought the power of thousands of working families to the Texas State Capitol. That power frightened Republican leaders like Representative Rinaldi and forced them to show and reveal the real intent behind SB4, to racially profile and to discriminate. Today, Workers' Defense members are making good on their promise to fight SB4 in court. We are proud to stand with MALDEF and the other plaintiffs in this suit to bring the voices of thousands of working Texas families into the judicial process. Make no mistake about it, Greg Abbott picked a fight with Texas families when he signed SB4. That is not a fight he's going to win.
Thank you, Jose. And finally, I mentioned in my introductory remarks the notorious preemptive lawsuit filed by the state of Texas against MALDEF, the city of Austin, and Travis County. And I'm pleased to now introduce an elected official from the city of Austin, Gregorio Greg Casar, who is a council member from District 4.
Hi, all. 2 weeks ago today, the Austin City Council voted overwhelmingly to authorize our city attorney to challenge Senate Bill 4 in court for threatening the safety and constitutional rights of Texans. Today, I'm proud to announce on behalf of the city of Austin that we will join San Antonio and MALDEF in challenging Senate Bill 4 in federal court in the Western District. We plan to file our formal motion first thing tomorrow morning. Soon after Governor Abbott signed this disgraceful law, community groups announced a summer of resistance against SB4, calling on elected officials to file challenges against the law in court. City leaders have responded swiftly. Upon filing suit against the state of Texas tomorrow morning, El Paso and Seniso, San Antonio, and Austin all will have responded to the community's call, and I expect even more cities and counties will soon follow.
Thank you. Thank you, Greg. Savannah, I think we are ready for questions at this point.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch tone telephone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone telephone. And we can take our first question from Phil Jankowski with Austin American. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, so just kind of a housekeeping question for me here in Austin. Is Austin going to file its own suit, or is it going to join on to the MALDEF and San Antonio lawsuit?
We will be filing to intervene in the San Antonio MALDEF suit. As you know, and as Tom mentioned, there is a frivolous suit from the Attorney General filed preemptively and without standing. So we are filing what we see as a legitimate suit in a legitimate venue with our brothers and sisters in San Antonio.
Thanks.
And we can take our next question from Rocio Gwinnether from the Revered Report. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you. My question is just if you can name all the organizations again, just to verify that everyone that is part of the suit.
Marisa, do you want to take that?
Sure. Rocio, we're representing the City of San Antonio, Ray Saldana in his official capacity as a San Antonio City Council member.
Okay.
A plaintiff organization called TACHE, the Texas Association of Chicanos in Higher Education. A plaintiff organization called LUPE, that's short for La Unión del Pueblo Entero.
Okay.
And then the plaintiff organization Workers Defense Project, which we refer to in our complaint as WDP.
WDP. Okay. Got it. Okay. What was the one asked before Texas Organization of Chicanos? Start with a P.
I'm sorry, you wanted the one before that?
I have San Antonio, oh. In his official capacity as council member. And then Texas Organization of Chicanos, La Unión del Pueblo Entero, and then Workers Defense Project. I'm missing one.
City of San Antonio.
Texas Association of Chicanos in Higher Education.
Okay.
So it's three nonprofit organizations, one individual in his official capacity, and the City of San Antonio.
Okay. Got it. And then you said that it was officially filed this evening?
That's right.
Yes.
Okay. Perfect. And then my other question is there any talks at all of Bexar County joining this?
This is Andy Segovia. We have not had really substantive discussions with the county about joining. So no, we haven't discussed that. At least the city hasn't.
Okay.
And all I would add is the plaintiffs that are in the case are the ones that we have been discussing with and are filing the suit on behalf of, but almost undoubtedly there will be other jurisdictions in Texas that may choose, like Austin, to intervene or to file their own challenges, and that's simply because there's widespread recognition of the harm that SB4 would deal to local cities and counties, as well as colleges and universities.
Okay. Thank you.
And we can take our next question from Jason Butch with San Antonio Express. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, y'all listed a number of constitutional amendments that you were saying this violates, and I know it was a few, and maybe it's not easy to hit all of them, but if somebody could maybe drill a little bit more into what the legal arguments are going to be in this, and also I don't believe that any counties or cities challenged SB 1070 in Arizona. I realize that they're not identical laws, but is there an added significance to it being a municipality challenging this versus the DOJ or a nonprofit? And if you could identify, whoever's responding could identify themselves, that would be great.
This is Thomas Sines, and I will start, and then I will turn it over to Andy. First, with respect to the claims, there are multiple, but the main legal issues in this case will revolve around whether what the state of Texas seeks to enforce is preempted by federal immigration law, Texas is taking on its own immigration policy, and that is unconstitutional. Second, whether the bill violates the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, and the lawsuit alleges that it does in a number of ways, beginning with the fact that it was passed to intentionally discriminate against the Latino and immigrant communities, but including the fact that SB 4 would require officials, police officers, basically to engage in racial profiling, which is also a violation of equal protection. It will also circulate around whether the bill violates the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment, and it does so in numerous ways, including by enforcing an arbitrary law enforcement scheme throughout the state of Texas in which individual police officers are permitted to make their own decisions without any guidance from sheriffs, police chiefs, or elected officials about engaging in immigration enforcement. The First Amendment issues relate to the fact that SB 4, as I think you heard earlier, would threaten to remove elected officials from office based on public statements of opposition, for example, to SB 4 if the state alleges and proves that those public statements materially limit the ability of individual police officers to make up their own minds about how and whether to enforce immigration laws. There is also a First Amendment claim built around academic freedom, the right that all universities and colleges have to make up their own minds about critical elements of delivering education. And those elements are threatened by SB 4's delegation of authority to individual police officers at universities and colleges to make up their own minds about how and whether to enforce immigration law. Now, there are other claims, including under the Contract Clause and under the Voting Rights Act, but I would say those are the major claims that are involved here. And with respect to your other question, before I turn it over to Andy, I do, of course, think there's significance that Andy can discuss about local government suing in this case. But that is also because of the unique elements of SB 4. Unlike SB 1070, which mandated that law enforcement engage in limited immigration enforcement, this is a licensing of every police officer to make up his or her own mind. In many ways, that makes it more dangerous than the mandate. With the mandate in SB 1070, elected sheriffs, appointed police chiefs, and elected officials at state and local level could and ultimately did guide and in some cases restrict how police officers went about complying with the mandate to engage in immigration enforcement. Here, the power is taken away from local government to do what it is authorized and expected to do by the people, to guide and control how law enforcement is engaged. And that's the unique attribute of this that is in many ways so very dangerous. Andy?
Absolutely, Tom. I just want to reinforce that. Again, because of the local control is a key issue for us, particularly of our public safety, particularly of our police force. Our police chief, again, has been on record a number of times emphasizing the fact that to effectively manage the resources and public safety, he needs to maintain control of that because SB 4 effectively removes a lot of his ability to manage the police force. It would undermine our ability to provide what is a very essential and fundamental role of a municipality, which is to provide for the public safety. That's why we feel this is very, very, very important to us. And again, to reinforce what was previously noted, public officials, elected public officials, are elected to advocate for their communities, for their constituents. Having to face the prospect of removal because they're advocating policies or advocating positions that their constituency or the community feel very strongly about, to subject them to potential removal for that really undermines the whole ability for a community like San Antonio to have their public officials do what they're elected to do. And that's why it's very important from a municipality standpoint.
And all this is Greg from Austin. I will just add one last point, which is I think that municipalities stepping up and local elected officials challenging this law is also a part of the continued showdown between the state government, which is governed primarily by a right-wing Republican regime and the progressive majority growing in Texas cities that disagrees. So as the state continues to try to preempt local governments from bringing progressive solutions on the environment or affordable housing or protections for workers, I think that these motions from cities, the action from cities to challenge the state of Texas and sue the state of Texas, is part of cities stepping up and fighting back against the state that is trying to impede progressivism from growing in our cities.
Thank you, Greg. And I neglected to mention the Fourth Amendment and going over the critical claims, and I will briefly talk about that because it's actually a claim that was anticipated by the state. SB4 does violate the Fourth Amendment protection against unlawful seizures in a number of ways. First and most importantly, it empowers law enforcement agents making up their own minds about immigration enforcement to detain people much longer than the Constitution permits for state or local violations. And second, the law requires each and every locality to honor every detainer request from ICE, even where there is not a constitutionally required level of cause to keep someone in jail. And keeping someone in jail when there is no constitutionally sufficient reason to do so is a quintessential violation of the Fourth Amendment. And finally, from your question, I just wanted to respond. Of course, the Department of Justice, unlike in SB 1070, is not likely to take up the cause of those who would be grievously injured by SB 4, and that, of course, is a result of the change in the presidential administration and the withdrawal from civil rights protection that is being telegraphed and pursued by the Trump administration.
Thank you, and we can take our next question from Joey Palacios with Texas Public Radio. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. I have two questions. The first being, who directed the city attorney's office to move forward with the lawsuit? Was this a consultation with each council member, and was there a vote? Because to my knowledge, there was no vote that was taken in public.
That's correct. There was no vote. In accordance with state law, the city attorney can consult with and discuss with city council pending litigation or ongoing litigation, and during that discussion is when we got direction to move forward.
And a follow-up to that first question, there were some council members that put out statements, one being Mayor Taylor and another being Councilman Gallagher, who seemed to go against this. So was the majority of council seemingly in favor of this?
Well, there was no vote taken, but I can tell you is I got clear direction from the city council to move forward.
Okay, and so my second question is, does MALDEF or City of San Antonio plan to approach the cities of Dallas or the cities of Houston to also be a part of this lawsuit or any other major cities or counties in Texas?
So on behalf of MALDEF, I have to demur. Unfortunately, we, due to reasons of attorney-client confidentiality, can't discuss any talks that we may be having with any other potential plaintiffs.
This is Jose Garza from Workers' Defense Project, and I will say for our part that I think part of what today is evidence of a growing movement of regular folks, working people across the state, demanding that their local elected officials take action against the state of Texas. That movement is growing in Dallas, and I think you will see over the coming weeks and months a swell of working people in Dallas calling on their city council to take action.
Okay. Thank you very much, Andy and everyone.
And we can take our next question from Julian Aguilar with Texas Tribune. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, thanks for having us on. You already answered the SB 1070 questions, but how would this affect what's currently going on with El Paso County and El Paso County sheriffs? I mean, is that a completely separate issue since El Paso County has that 2006 settlement, or was there any discussion about, was there any reaching out to other entities, including Encinitas and Maverick County, who have also filed suit in the Western District of the Western District of Texas on this issue?
So I will simply answer that by saying that what we expect, I think everyone expects to occur, is that the cases, all of them, filed currently or to be filed, including the cases already filed by El Ceniso and El Paso, will ultimately be consolidated in the appropriate forum in San Antonio to determine the constitutionality of SB 4, and more important, perhaps, to hear and decide motions for preliminary injunction to prevent the implementation of the law on September 1 as intended. The important point here is that there is still many weeks to have the cases consolidated, for motions to be filed, to be briefed, and to be heard and decided before September 1st. And the importance of the filing today, together with those previously and those to come, is to convey to the communities throughout Texas that there is no reason at present to panic, that there is plenty of time to ensure that the appropriate authorities in federal court have an opportunity to decide whether the constitutional questions are so significant and the irreparable harms so palpable that the law should not be implemented while these cases are resolved. And we expect there to be a decision on that in these cases prior to September 1.
Great, thanks.
And we can take our next question from Gus Bova with Texas Observer. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, I guess this is for MALDEF more than anyone. The current suits, the El Ceniso suit and the El Paso suit, are not identical to one another. I'm curious whether your suit has any, if there's any important differences between your suit and the ones that already exist.
Well, I am certain that our suit includes claims that are not in the previously filed cases. It also includes claims that almost certainly are in those previously filed cases, but it is correct that they are not identical, which is in part why consolidation and consideration before the appropriate court in San Antonio is the most efficient and effective way of addressing the multiple constitutional and other legal claims against SB 4.
This is Andy Segovia. I just wanted to confirm that it was our expectation as we made a decision to go forward that these various cases would be consolidated and that the appropriate forum to consolidate them would be here in San Antonio.
Okay, thank you very much. And then one other little question. I was just curious if you have any sense of when and how this, I mean, it's a bit of an important question, right, whether this is going to play out in Austin on the Attorney General's terms or in San Antonio on y'all's terms. When and how is that going to resolve?
In some ways, that's up to the courts, but there are currently pending motions in Austin and San Antonio in the previously filed cases to determine whether those cases should be consolidated in one place or the other. I will simply say that MALDEF has filed briefs in the Austin case and an amicus brief in the case in San Antonio, the El Ceniso case, urging the courts to recognize that you ought not be able to determine the forum for a case to be resolved based on filing a frivolous preemptive suit. And that's exactly what the state did. Indeed, if that were an appropriate way of determining venue, it would happen all the time, and it doesn't. Everyone was surprised by the preemptive suit because most responsible lawyers don't engage in that kind of shenanigan, and that's what it is. When you file a frivolous suit without standing and then seek to use that to argue that that's the venue where a case should be heard, I would characterize it as bootstrapping when you're barefoot. It is not going to work, and you're liable to hurt yourself in the process.
Thank you very much.
And we can take our next question from Laurel Calkins with Bloomberg News. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you for the call. From a practical matter, I know you would prefer to fight this fight in San Antonio, but does it actually matter if it gets consolidated in Austin or in San Antonio? Both judges that have been assigned so far are, you know, fairly liberal on the spectrum. Does it really matter? And I have another question after.
And I would just say it's not really a matter of the judges. It's a matter of the appropriateness of the process And again, the great concern is that if this becomes an accepted precedent, that you can file a frivolous lawsuit when you're the government and thereby determine where your law is to be challenged, it will be a problem in the future. That will become standard operating procedure. And that's why it simply can't be permitted.
I see. In the past, when Texas has done something that's perceived as discriminatory, especially against Hispanics, the Obama DOJ jumped in to support the advocacy groups against the state. What is your expectation for any role the Trump DOJ might play in this action on either side?
We don't expect the Trump administration to play any role. We certainly don't expect them to come in to support the lawsuit that was filed. Unfortunately, what Texas legislature and governor did with SB 4 was to take the rhetoric from the Trump administration to an even more extreme point in actual enacted legislation. In addition, as I mentioned previously, this administration has indicated strongly its intention to pull back from going into court and defending minority civil rights in any context. With respect to your question of whether they would attempt to support the state of Texas, my guess would be they will do that rhetorically. They will do that in tweets. But I do not expect the federal government to intervene in support of this nefarious state law.
Thank you.
Savannah, are there any more questions?
Yes, we'll take our next question from Diane Salas with Dallas Morning News. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you for this. Most onerous portion of the law.
I'm sorry, Diane, I didn't hear the first part of your question.
Yeah, what is the worst part of the SB 4 law from your viewpoint?
That's a tough question. There's so many devils in this law, it's hard to pick the worst of them. But I would point out this unprecedented provision to remove people from elective office, as Andy has said, for advocating policies within the realm of appropriate local policy that their constituents very much favor and want to see championed. I haven't seen anything like this or can't think of an analogy without going back to the McCarthy era and the loyalty oaths and other ridiculous violations of free speech that were unfortunately attempted in that day and age. It is truly extraordinary to suggest in this one realm that a elected official could be removed from office for advocating what their constituents need and want with respect to this one area of policy. Greg or Andy, if you wanted to add anything.
Yeah, if I would add, rather than taking a look at, you know, what particular element, I would look at it more thematically. At least that's the way the city is looking at it. It's more thematically in terms of local control of our public safety. Local control in terms of public officials being able to articulate and develop policy, and also just the discriminatory nature of it in terms that, again, it will inevitably target those members of our community that are the most vulnerable.
And hi, all. This is Greg from the Austin City Council. I would echo the sentiment that the worst part of this law to me is that It has been pitched on public safety, but clearly has nothing to do with public safety and everything to do with political expediency. So that is the law as a whole. But as far as a particular portion of the law, because I think that's part of what your question was, I would say that it's all bad. But one part that has been reported on less, you know, there's been a lot of attention put on police officers being able to ask for papers, please, on arrest or on detention. But another portion of the law that requires that we cannot ask our police officers to not participate in ICE enforcement activity is very troublesome, especially given the retaliatory ICE sweeps that swept across the country, but in particular hit Austin really hard, where in my own community, dozens of families were torn apart, by ICE, the majority of whom had no criminal history whatsoever. Under what SB 4 wants, we cannot tell our police officers, our over 1,700 sworn police officers, not to engage in that activity. And if they were to decline engaging in activity and a complainant said that that was because of some unwritten policy or practice, we could be hit with criminal charges, or the police chief or I could be removed, and we could face millions of dollars in fines. So that has been less reported on, that this is not just about police officers asking people for their papers at traffic stops. It's also about the federal government acknowledging they don't have the resources within ICE to enact mass deportation plans, but they can try to, through bills like Senate Bill 4, commandeer our local police officers and take them off of neighborhood beats and coerce them into being deportation agents.
Thank you, Greg. Marisa, did you want to add anything?
No, I don't have anything to add in this time. I think, again, just thematically, the fact that the state would once again try to force local law enforcement into the shoes of federal immigration officers when so many federal courts across the country, including the United States Supreme Court, have very clearly stated that that's a no-no, it's mind-boggling to me.
Thank you.
And we can take our next question from Suzanne Gamboa with NBC News. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. For having the call. I just want to ask real quick, considering the decision in the Supreme Court on SB 1070 and the precedents that were set there, and where how it honed the questioning of people about their immigration or citizenship status. How do you see any application of that to this law at all? How do you think that it might affect what Texas is trying to do, if at all? Do you see any arguments there that can be applied? And I'd also just ask whether you're seeing any other city attorneys feeling forced to advise their cities to go ahead and follow the law, lest their cities risk penalties, even as the challenges are moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Suzanne. With respect to the first part of your question, as you all know, in Arizona versus United States on SB 1070, in 2013, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down three of the four provisions that were before it, the fourth provision related to a mandate to engage in immigration enforcement by local police. It's important to note that that was a decision on preliminary injunction. So the court did not reach a final conclusion about the lawfulness of that provision, and indeed it raised a number of serious questions about details of how it would be implemented. That is where that decision helps here. The problem with SB 4 is it does not permit any certainty whatsoever about how that permission to local police would be implemented. Why? Because it ensures that no sheriff, police chief, elected council member or mayor, or other elected official would step forward to guide and restrict how local law enforcement engages in immigration enforcement. The reason? They face removal from office, criminal prosecution, escalating fines, if they are determined to have materially limited the ability of local police to make up their own minds about how to enforce. So in that way, this is much worse than SB 1070. Because the questions that the Supreme Court raised about implementation, the day-to-day immigration enforcement, can't be answered except by each individual police officer in the state of Texas. Therefore, I believe the Supreme Court, faced with a similar challenge to this piece of law, would more easily conclude that any of its questions about actual implementation are a nullity, because the state of Texas has unconstitutionally delegated authority to each individual police officer to decide when, whether, and how to engage in immigration enforcement. With respect to the other city attorneys, I don't know, Andy, if you might have a sense might be able to answer based on your colleagues.
Yes, if I understand the question correctly, it would make implementation of the bill would make it very difficult for city attorneys to really effectively provide guidance and counsel to our police chief and elected officials as to how they would best manage or manage their way through SB4 once it's implemented. Because the statute is so broad and vague, I would imagine that our police chief and a lot of public safety officials across the state would find it difficult in terms of trying to gear up for effectively complying with the law. And that's why we think it's vitally important that we file the action when we did file it. And our expectation is that through the litigation process, SB4 will not go into effect.
Thank you. And we can take our next question from Mary Tuma with Austin Chronicle. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. Thanks so much for doing this. I just had a quick question. Because, you know, San Antonio is filing a suit and Austin is intervening, will Austin filing mimic that of San Antonio? Will be anything additional, additionally noted or challenged? And can you also talk a little bit more about Austin's role in all of it?
Hi, Mary. It's Greg Kassar from the Austin City Council. And we will be filing to intervene, but we'll bring Austin-specific issues to the table. Our paperwork on this will be publicly available tomorrow morning, and we will send that out to the press so that you can compare and contrast our arguments. They will be substantially similar, but we will be bringing, you know, our own thoughts to the table as well. And I think you had a second part of your question, but I already forgot.
No, I mean, that was, is there anything else that, you know, should be noted about Austin's involvement in this? So I think you answered that pretty well, and I could take a look at the filing tomorrow and get the rest of that. But if there's anything you want to add, please feel free.
No, I think that it goes to show that while sometimes folks have looked to Austin as, labeled Austin as an unlawful, you know, the Governor Abbott and others as an unlawful sanctuary city, our filing alongside and intervening into San Antonio's alongside all these other cities, I think goes to show that really the supporters of SB4 have gone way too far and are threatening the constitutional rights and the ethics of Texans all over the state, from tiny border towns to some of the biggest cities in the country.
Great. Thank you so much.
And as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone telephone. We can go next to Pedro Rojas with Univision. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes. Good evening. Just got a couple of questions. Number one, is there going to be a TV media availability sometime tomorrow, whether in San Antonio and Austin? And the next question was, is the lawsuit targeted towards the governor and the legislature or to some other officials in the state specifically?
Manisa, would you go over the defendants? And then I'll ask Sandra Hernandez will get back to you, Pedro, specifically about the TV availability.
Thank you.
Sure. We sued the state of Texas, Governor Abbott in his official capacity as governor, and Ken Paxton in his official capacity as attorney general.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
As far as TV availability in Austin, Jose, you can tell me if anything's different, but folks in Austin will be available at 11 in the morning at Workers Defense Project, at Workers Defense Project's offices here in Austin.
Thank you.
And we can go next to Michael Barreras with San Antonio Current. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks. One question I had is a big important element in some of these legal challenges over Texas laws has been legislative intent. So or what lawmakers wanted to happen or the actual purpose of the law being challenged. So can you talk about what role that might play in the legal challenge over SB4 moving forward, if you see any, or I guess particularly after the activity that we saw in the legislature on its final day this past week, what role that might play in the legal challenge moving forward?
As I said, there are multiple claims in this lawsuit, and one of them is that the law was enacted with discriminatory intent against Latinos and against immigrants. So it will play a role as the case develops. As you may be aware, the United States Supreme Court 40 years ago laid out the test for intent that includes being able to use as circumstantial evidence such as incidents that occurred while or contemporaneously with consideration of the law, departures from the process, the discriminatory impact rather than its intent. But those and many other circumstantial factors convinced us that there is a claim to be developed about the racial intent behind SB 4. And so I expect that much of what has occurred in the legislature and outside the legislature with regard to this law will be considered and brought to the court's attention.
And Michael, if I could add to that, we did include allegations in the complaint about Representative Rinaldi's comments this past week. It's on pages 19 and 20 of the complaint. Specifically, the taunting that Representative Rinaldi made when he said that he called ICE on all of them and that ICE needed to deport all of these illegals. We allege in the complaint that the statement implied an assumption that all of the members in the gallery were undocumented or many were undocumented simply because they appeared to be Latino. And it was that type of racist rhetoric that surrounded the debate and ultimately the passage of SB 4.
This is Jose Garza from Workers Defense Project, and I think part of what that episode demonstrated is that Republican elected officials have a hard time hiding their animosity and racist intent when working families stand up to them. And I can assure you that throughout the summer, working families are going to continue to stand up to Republicans who voted for SB 4 and who have pushed this kind of racist rhetoric. So I think there will be plenty of opportunities as the summer goes on for Republicans to reveal their intent, so stay tuned.
And I would just add one more thing. I did mention that this lawsuit includes a claim under the Voting Rights Act. I would note that in recent months, two separate federal courts have reached very stark conclusions that the Texas legislature has been motivated by racial intent with respect to restricting voting rights.
Okay, thank you very much.
And it does appear we have no further questions at this time. I can turn it back over to our speakers for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you, Savannah, and thank you all for joining us. This is a developing set of circumstances. The lawsuit filed today is a critical one because of the true injuries faced by the plaintiffs, because of the breadth of the legal claims made against SB 4. There have been previously filed cases, and there will be more filed cases. That's been asked about. What we expect is all of those cases, all of them will add their own unique notes, but together they will create a harmony, a symphony in support of the Constitution in contrast to the nasty cacophony that is SB 4. Thank you all once more for joining us. Good evening.